Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode 4 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we have got, once again, a great program ahead for you. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And yes, it's episode 4 of the program here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and your Flames Talk podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And we're continuing our chat with Lanny McDonald. We heard part 1 of our chat with Lanny last week on the program. So this week, part 2 of the sit down with Lanny McDonald. On this week's episode, Lanny sitting down with our host Brent Cron, along with Colin Patterson, and even Mike Vernon still hanging out for this great conversation. We'll be covering Lanny's time in Toronto through to joining the Flames and a whole lot more, and we'll get to the conversation in just minutes' time. But first, it's time for This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And we're going back 10 years ago this week to a pretty special night at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We take you back, yeah, April 9th of 2015.
Russell picks it up, gives it to Gaudreau, and he'll lock it out to center. Monahan to Hoedler. He scores!
Yeah, it was about 10 years ago on April 9th, 2015, the Flames clinched their first playoff berth in 6 years thanks to a 3-1 win over the LA Kings. The win eliminated the defending Stanley Cup champion Kings from the playoffs, while Calgary made the playoffs for the first time since 2009. Yuri Hoedler hit the 30-goal mark for the first and only time in his NHL career as part of that win. He'd finished the season with a career-high 31. Flames would go on to meet Vancouver in round one of the playoffs. They'd win that series in 6 games and eventually bow out to the Anaheim Ducks in round number 2. But yeah, 10 years ago this week, the Flames clinched their first playoff berth in 6 years in game 81 against the LA Kings. That was April 9th of 2015. And that is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Well, let's get right to it. It's time for Lanny McDonald. He's sitting down with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and Mike Vernon as well. And we're looking back to Lanny's time as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs and one of the toughest teammates he ever had, one of the toughest players of all time, Tiger Williams. Let's get this week's conversation started right now.
Tiger fought everyone in Philadelphia. Moose DuPont, Ed Van Emp, Schultze, Selesky, Dornhofer, and then, like, they were, that tough. Team was sick.
Oh, they were huge.
Yeah, and so...
Were they wearing Cooperalls then, or no?
No, that was after.
Okay. Bob Kelly?
And Bob Kelly. And Bob Kelly...
Terry Crisp?
No,
Terry Crisp
no.
was there.
But he didn't fight.
No, he certainly didn't. Yeah. That's a whole nother story. Yeah. I can't go there. Yeah. Anyway...
Oh, jeez.
Bob Kelly and Tiger probably had 3 or 4 fights, and they both fought... Like, they were about probably 12 to 18-inch jackhammers, like straight on. And right at the end of the second period, the buzzer goes, and they're right in front of the bench, and the two of them go at it. And it was like you're in a tennis match. And it was like, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. And it went back and forth. They must have hit each other 50 times. And... everyone's like, holy God, what a fight. Like, Tiger, way to go. We can come up for the third period and we'll be awesome. We go up to the dressing room and everyone's congratulating Tiger. And Tiger, oh, yeah. I must have hit him 50 times. He never got me once. And Daryl, without missing a beat, says, Tiger, I know you got him probably 50, but you got to look in the mirror. And Tiger goes around the corner, and you hear this chuckle. And he comes back out, and it looked like someone had taken a ball peen hammer to his head. And there were lumps and bumps coming out everywhere. And Tiger licking his lips. Well, I know I got him 50, but he must have got a lucky one in there somewhere. And that was...
You want another one, Lanny, or you guys...
Oh, yeah, we'll have another one.
Oh, I'll grab another one, too.
Yeah, might have one.
Oh my God.
That was great. I love that. He slipped in a few, right? He got lucky.
So did you play with Paul Mateer?
Oh my God. Paul me? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Come on. Cronin, you got to ask a goalie question.
Oh, I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Sorry, buddy. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. You're controlling this.
No. That's why you're here.
Yeah. I got to go back just for a second to the 10 point night because. And there's a reason. Red Kelly decided he was going to play Daryl, Errol, and I on the same line. And we had gone in and talked to him and said, why don't you try it? And the newspaper was all over it, said, like, we're not sure this is going to work, putting all your eggs in one basket. And Red said, I'll give you one game. And we play the Washington Capitals on Wednesday, and we tie them and have to come back. And our line gets two of the four goals, and we go to practice the next day, and we think we're fine. And Red Kelly has broken up the line. So we go out for practice, and we're back with Tiger. And Errol is with, I think, George Ferguson, and I can't even remember who the right winger was. And we go right in after practice and said, Red, you gave us one game. We scored two of the four goals. You got to give us a week. And if it doesn't work, okay, like we understand, like just give us 1 week. We go to practice on Friday, nothing. We're all apart. We go to practice on Saturday morning, and he put us back together. And we play the Boston Bruins that night. The night Daryl scores 12 points. And if we didn't beg him to try for 1 week, it would have never happened.
Wow.
And you talk about history, a part of history.
Wow.
There it was.
Yeah.
It's
Paul Mateer.
Why is it? Why is it coaches are so stubborn?
You know what? They're on their own agenda. And if you think about it, Vernie, they're trying to protect themselves to make sure they've got a job the next year, too.
I know.
And thank goodness. Like a guy like Daryl, who had such great understanding of the game and what it takes to win, was there. And Errol and I were just like, yeah, I agree with what Daryl said.
Whatever he says.
Whatever, let's go.
So in Washington, your line gets two goals, but were you minus two? Also, like where you're on for all.
Oh, I didn't even look at that.
I was wondering if that was the reason why you didn't.
It doesn't matter.
Or you were even, maybe.
No, they were minus
even.
Two.
You're even.
I'm sure we were
at least even. Oh, God.
Oh, that's good. Oh. Punch Imlach.
That was the biggest mistake, because Floyd Smith, Dick Duff, they all came together. And you talk about, I think it was 78 and 79, having a chance to go to the quarterfinals and semifinals, knowing you were close, and then Punch coming in, and Punch believed that Daryl, Boria, and myself had way too much power. So he was going to do whatever it took to take back control. And All he had to do was tweak the team a little bit, add a player here or maybe two, and we had a chance. And in less than a year, 13 guys, I believe it was, were gone from the team.
Ego.
And you talk about good management. If all he had to do was just tweak it,
yeah,
not destroy it. And they were never the same for 20 more years.
Well, no, and to put his name on it, right? Like, oh, you know what I mean? Let the team roll, fix it, tweak it a little bit. Don't turn it over and this is my team now. There's, holy smokes.
That. So when I get traded, and there's all kinds of stories going on, and Pat Boutette, I think, was the first guy that got traded for to Hartford. There's Hartford again. I think for Richardson.
Yeah.
Lee might have been Lee Richardson. I can't even remember. And then right after Christmas, December 28th, it's my turn to get traded because Darryl had no trade contract. And everyone talks about, okay, they took it out on me to show Darryl who is boss. That didn't matter to me. It was Punch just being Punch.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. We practiced twice at that time because we weren't playing well, but Floyd Smith and Dick Duff were coaching, and Punch Imlach would blow the whistle up in the stands and come down and tell them to change the drills. So we knew Floyd was just a puppet.
For sure.
And that made it even worse. So we practiced twice, once in the morning, and he'd make you come in
2 days?
Yeah, 2 days.
Oh, nightmares.
Because
because
he believed we weren't playing hard enough. Well, right. We were exhausted.
Yeah.
After a week of two-a-days. So he'd make you come in rush hour and make you go home in rush hour so that there was about a three-hour gap. You couldn't do anything in between. And after the second practice, I get told by the trainer, Punch wants to see you in the coach's office. And I know right away, okay, this is not good.
Yeah.
And so I go into the coach's office. I go into the coach's office, and there's Punch. And Punch says right away, this is the part of the game I hate the most.
Oh,
and I'm thinking,
come on.
You.
Yeah.
And he said, we've traded you. And I said, where am I going? And he said, I don't have to tell you. And I said, what do you mean you don't have to tell me? He said, that's my business. You'll find out soon enough. And I said, where am I going? He said, I don't have to tell you that either. And he sticks out his hand and he said, I just want to wish you good luck. And my biggest regret, God bless him, because he's, I'm not sure where exactly he is. Up there somewhere.
Up or down.
Right, that I didn't drill him because no one was in the room. No one would have known.
He could have been hanging curtains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I go out and the other trainer said, Lenny, the press wants to talk to you. So I go to the press. I haven't even had a chance to talk to my teammates. And they said, what do you think about the trade? And I said, well, first of all, I don't even know where I'm going. And they said, well, you're going to Colorado. And I said, who am I traded for? So they tell me, and I said, is anyone else in the trade? And I said, Joel Quenneville.
Mac, if I can jump in and go,
yeah.
This is what makes Lanny the greatest leader. Continue on.
Let me set the stage. Hey, Patter? Yeah, I love it.
So I stopped the press right there, and I said, you need to give me 1 second. I need, because I knew Punch had left the room, and Joel, I knew, did not know. And so I said, I will come right back and answer all your questions. I need to talk to Joel. I go into the dressing room. Joel is sitting there, has no idea. And I go over and I say, Joel, you don't know it, but you and I have been traded. And we're going to Colorado. And I think Joel's comment was, well, at least I'm going with you.
Oh, that's great.
But you guys are the best of friends today.
And we're best of friends today. We lived together. He took 5 years off my career, but that's a whole other story.
That's another story, yeah.
Yeah, but that's how I found out I was traded. And I remember with Joel being at the airport the next morning, and Ardell's crying, her mama's looking after the kids, and she was 10 days away from having Leah, our second daughter, and I'm off with Joel to
drink him beer.
The worst team in the league at that point.
Oh, man.
But it didn't matter because we were going together.
Jeez.
And I did go right back out and talk to the press. And you know what? It was fun to be able to say, hey, Joel's going with me. But what a dick not telling me where I was actually going and that I was going with anybody.
That story just pisses me off hearing it.
It's unbelievable. You know, when you think of everything about it.
Well, doesn't mean a good person.
No.
You know what I mean? Like even if you don't like the guy, it's like, hey, you're gone. Yeah. We're trading you to Colorado. Things didn't work out here. You know what? Good luck the rest of the way. And that's it. Like, you don't have to be nice about it, but at least be a human being. Wow.
Yeah, all it would have taken was a little...
Courtesy
and understanding.
Respect.
Okay. Yep. Right? I get it.
Yeah, but you know...
I know.
The game of hockey, it's especially in those days, like even when it's ruthless, and
I know
you got to move on, you got to have thick skin, and you got to just take it for what it is, and like you know somebody else wants you, so that you got to build on that
for sure. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
9.5 years ago, when I got asked to become chairman of the Hockey Hall of Fame, Patter and I are having a beer together, and Patter said, Mac, now that you're chairman, like, when are you getting me in?
Yeah.
And so when you're chairman, you get these nice little pucks that say you're entitled to a visit at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So I put 5 of them in an envelope. I sent them to Patter, and I said, Patter, I know you always wanted to get in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Here you are. 5 passes.
Yeah, it's a great place to visit.
You can imagine me opening up the envelope.
He didn't take it well.
I open up the envelope in front of my family, and we're finally in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And,
Vernie was telling the story, too, but when you guys called Vernie for the
God.
Yeah, Hall of Fame inductee or whatever. Hey, Colin, can you give me Vernie's number so we can get him in here?
I can't believe he didn't have my number.
Hey, it happens.
I was looking for Scotty Bowman's number today.
I'll send you Scotty's.
Patter's got it too.
Happened, Ardell, X'd your number out of my phone.
Yeah. you lost your phone. I got a new one.
Yeah, there you go.
Didn't reload. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Who is this? You know, he lost his Rolodex, his pager, right? His worldwide pager we were talking about on the bench there.
I love those. I give my old phone number to my kid. He gets calls
all the time.
Honest, Scott. It's unreal. So I get in, announced the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Johnny gets a call, and he's at work, answers, Mike. And I go, and my son John goes, oh, no, this is my dad's old phone. This is John Vernon, his son, and things like that. Well, it's Wayne Gretzky. Can I? And he's like, talking to Wayne Gretzky? And he's like, and he's at the office, and everybody in the office is like,
That's so good.
And he goes, well, this is my dad's new number and stuff. I'll text it to you, this and that. And Johnny's like,
I got Wayne Gretzky's number in my phone now.
That's awesome. That's so good. So you get to Colorado and you got Don Cherry to deal with next.
Yep.
How'd that go?
Well, first of all, I go from number 7 in Toronto.
Yeah.
I get to Colorado and a guy by the name of Randy Pierce had number 7. And Wilf,
great player.
Wilf Paymont. Wilf Paymont went the other way, and he had number 9. And Randy Pierce said, "Lanny, like out of respect, like you can have number 7." I said, "Randy, I'm never going to take your number. That's yours. You've been here for over a couple of years." Like, asked the trainers, "What is open?" And they said, "Number 9." And I said, "Gordie Howe?
Perfect.
Yeah, let's
go." I said, "I'm in." But the story continues because I get to Calgary when I get traded, and Bearcat has number 7 with McDonald on it when I get to the rink. And I said, "Bearcat, like, I know 9 is open because Donnie Lever went the other way." I said, "Can I please not have number 7? Can I have number 9? He said, "Game time tonight, it'll be changed. It's yours." Wow. I said, "I can't go back. I need to go forward."
Yeah.
And that's how I got number 9 in Calgary.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So when you get to Colorado, your second year, you were minus 28. You guys weren't a good team.
Oh, no, no, it was just bad changes. Bad changes.
That was an added problem. That was an added issue.
Hey, Lanny, you're out. Oh, my God. I scored again.
Yeah.
I guess.
I could hardly wait for this one. It was the goalie's fault.
It's goalie's fault. Goalie's fault.
Who did you have? You had a Swedish goalie there.
Yeah. Hardy Astro.
Hardy Astro.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
And Don Cherry roasted him every night.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Sorry, Lanny. I didn't even know who Hardy Astro was until I listened to Don Cherry's Coach's Corner. And Hardy, every time there was something bad with a goal, he reminds me, that's a Hardy Astro goal. That's a Hardy Astro this, Hardy Astro that. I had never seen the guy play, but I know it was a tough one for you.
Oh, my God. Don used to say, "Hardy couldn't stop a beach ball." Yeah. And he was so right.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, like Hardy would get to the rink. If we were playing a tough game, Hardy said, "Oh, I'm not feeling that good. I don't think I can go." It's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Man. Yeah.
But that was Hardy. And God bless Graves.
Yeah.
When you think about it, when you're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs at the end of October, it's hard to get up for the rest of the year.
For sure it is.
But Graves, to his credit, when I got traded, he called me that very day and said, "Look, I understand you got a family situation. Here's the deal. You do not have to practice one day with the team. You come play the games, and until Ardell has the baby," he said, "you and I are fine, and I'll take the heat from management and the rest of the, the players."
How far did that go for you? Like, that's awesome, eh?
It was unbelievable. I played, I think, 5 games before Ardell had the baby. It might have been the best hockey I ever played, and I'll never forget a game in Detroit. And I don't think we won any of those games. We go to Detroit, and they were not bad at that time. We win the game 5-2. Never forget it. I get 2 goals and 2 assists. And Graves is talking after the game, like, "Holy God, like, the guy, he comes to play every night," and they're asking, like, "What was your routine today?" "Well, I visited Ardell in the hospital," and then "I got to Detroit at 4 o'clock. I had 2 Big Macs and a package of chips and headed for the game." And the only reason you play that well is you didn't want to let your coach down,
sure,
because he had given you this freedom.
Yeah.
And even all those years later, Grapes is still one of my favorite people.
Wow.
Were the two assists shots off the goalie's pads and somebody put them in?
Patter, you know better than ask me that question. Of course they were. They were off the pads. It was the only way I could get it back out to the guy.
All right, we're just getting started with this conversation with Lanny McDonald as we are well underway on this week's program. It's Lanny McDonald in conversation with Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and Mike Vernon's there as well. This is the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. My name is Pat Steinberg, and it's time for Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight Package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And once again, we've got a Lanny McDonald themed question for you on Flames Trivia. Lanny still holds the Flames franchise record for goals in a single season with 66, which he set back during the 1982-83 season. So he had 66 goals that year, but did not lead the team in scoring. What player did lead the team in points that same season when Lanny scored 66 goals? We'll give you a few seconds to think about it. And the correct answer, did you get it? Kent Nielsen, the correct answer. So the year that Lanny set the franchise record with 66 goals in a single season, he finished second in team scoring to Kent Nielsen, who had 46 goals, 58 assists, and 104 points that season. He led the team, and that is Flames Trivia this week. It's brought to you by OSY Rentals. Well, lots still to get to with Lanny McDonald, as he is the man of honor on this week's program. It's the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit Cumming Gillespie. com. More from our chat with Lanny McDonald when we come back. Stay with us. All right, we're rolling along. It is episode 4 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's part of your Flames Talk podcast feed and, of course, here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And we'll get back to the conversation with the Hall of Famer, Lanny McDonald, in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week on Where Are They Now, we are focusing in on former goaltender Rick Walmsley, or Gump as the alumni call him. Played 12 seasons with the Montreal Canadiens, St. Louis Blues, and of course, Calgary Flames. Won the Stanley Cup in 1989 with the Flames. Shared the William M. Jennings Trophy in 1982 while with Montreal. Posted a career 3.34 goals against with 204 wins in 407 games. After his playing career, Rick transitioned into coaching and scouting roles. Rick's living in Ridgeway, Ontario, still working in the NHL as a pro scout with the Colorado Avalanche. Rick Gump Walmsley on Where Are They Now this week. Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Let's get back to it. It's time for part two of this week's conversation with Lanny McDonald. He's chatting with Brent Cron. He's chatting with Colin Patterson and Mike Vernon. And we got to go back to the trade that brought Lanny home. We're taking you back to November of 1981 when Lanny was sent here to the Calgary Flames. Let's listen in.
So, Mac, let's go. Okay. Now you're in Colorado. Now talk about the trade to Calgary. Talk about the Al McNeil factor first, because we just lost Al, and you know, and the impact he had on everybody.
So I'm in Colorado, and our team is not playing well. We're mathematically, like I said, out of the playoffs at the end of October, and it's tough to play for the rest of the year after that. We play in Calgary. I haven't played for 2.5, 3 weeks. I've got a bad separated shoulder, and I didn't want to let family down. So we come to Calgary.
With the players. You just didn't want to let family down. Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah. So cool.
I wanted...
Mike Vernon.
I wanted to play the game in Calgary, so I play the game, and we were really close. We got beat 9-2.
Yeah. You had them right where you wanted them, eh?
Yeah.
You've been involved in a lot of those 9-2, 9-1 games.
Lanny was plus two that game.
I was going to say, no, I'm the opposite direction here now, yeah.
I'm thinking that's not the case. Anyway, after the game, we're going out. My mom and dad are at the game. We're going out for a bite to eat. So we're walking through the parking lot, and who do I run into? Pee-wee, Pierre Paget, and L. McNeil. And L introduced himself to my mom and dad and said, hey, listen, Lanny, he called me kid all the time back then. He said, hey, kid, like, you never know when things are going to change. Just hang in there and, like, work out. So he obviously knew something. I get on the plane the next morning. We fly to Winnipeg, and I get off the plane in Winnipeg, and I see the Air Canada agent looking for somebody, and finally he calls out, is Lanny McDonald here? Well, I got the mustache. Come on. Here I am.
Yes.
And he said, I need to talk to you. And... The Air Canada agent hands the note to Marshall Johnson, who is the assistant coach, and because Billy McMillan, the GM, stayed behind in Calgary
to do the deal.
And there you go. And Marshall says, Lanny, you're going back to Calgary. And I said, well, who is it? My mom, my dad? Like, what happened? And he said, no, like, you're going back to Calgary. I know I'm going back to Calgary. What happened? He said, we traded you back to Calgary. I grab him. I got him up against the wall, and I'm screaming at him. And Rob Ramage, Mike Kitchen, Steve Tambellini are trying to pull me off, saying, because the boys all, like,
circled
around because they knew something was going on. And they pulled me off and they said, Lanny, like, get your gear and get your ass back on the plane. So I go down to the bus and I'm going to get on and talk to the boys. And Marshall Johnson says, nope, you're not allowed. Like, you're no longer a member of Colorado Rockies. Oh, okay. So I jump on the bus, slam the door, and Marshall's outside, and he's knocking on the door. And I told the driver, do not open that door under any circumstances. And I talked to the boys, and I wish them good luck, and I said, you hang together. And I go around, and I shake every guy's hand, and I walk back off
the... Good for you.
That's why he's a great leader. How satisfying was that, too, hey?
Oh, my God. And there's Marshall out front. See you, Marshall. Oh, my God.
How happy were you to be in Calgary? Were you excited to come back to Alberta to play?
I was nervous, actually, because you've gone full circle. There wasn't even a team here when I first went to Toronto. There was the rumors I was going to Atlanta, and then that didn't happen. Thank goodness. And you go to Colorado, get back to Calgary, and now they've got a team. And I was nervous playing in front of family and friends. Vernie, you know all about that. And
yeah, but they didn't boo you.
Lanny.
Where's the real flames?
Well, it could not have worked out better. My God!
Absolutely, you're like a hometown boy.
Well, Dad would come into the games and we'd say, Dad, and sadly, we're on the west side of the city out in Springbank, and he had to go back to Hannah, and he said, no, it's 20 minutes that way. No, I'll be partway home by the time. And he might have stayed a half a dozen times.
That's it?
At the house, because he always believed he had to get home to the farm in case something it went happened, wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No ring road, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, nothing.
Well, and that's a really pretty drive, too, to Anna.
Hey.
You know what? In case somebody sold a, you know, or put three cows down on a vehicle.
Oh, my God.
Talk about that story.
Oh, my God. So I'm in Medicine Hat. Dad would let us buy a cow or a calf that became a cow each year. And we had to obviously do all the work on the farm, and that was kind of payment. And so we get to Medicine Hat, and now all of a sudden I find the love of my life, Ardell. Well, I don't have a vehicle, so maybe I should buy a car. So I buy a 66 Grand Parisian, two-door hardtop, white leather seats, bucket seats, I might add.
Wow.
Save some tricks to the rest of us, Lanny. That's
$1,600. Unbelievable. $1,600. I only had $700 to put down on the car. I had to put my three cows up for collateral. My dad was furious. Dad was furious. Like, you put the cows up for collateral? Dad, it's
Mr. Mabel and Betsy.
Honest, Dad, it's going to be
lean
okay.
Against the cow.
Oh, my God. And thank God it worked out. I didn't have to sell the cows. And, the rest is
history.
That's
good.
Oh, my God.
That's a great story. You don't have the car anymore, obviously.
No, I
that's
don't have
bad.
Don't have the car, but that thing was a piece of thing.
Yeah.
That thing was a Cole piece
still
of
got
beauty.
The cows. Robert Badger Bob.
So Badger, when he came in, and Badger reminded me so much of Roger in Toronto, but another step up. And, like, he broke things down like I had never seen before. And I credit Bob with teaching Al McGinnis what it would take to be a great defenseman, not only on the defensive side, but obviously on the offensive side.
Yeah.
And he was... Guy Chouinard used to play the point on the power play, and he had this cross-ice pass. Kent Nielsen was on one, the opposite wings, and I was on the other. And it went to Guy Chouinard and across to myself. And that was Guy Chouinard that taught that whole play. And then Al McGinnis... became the disciple, and he learned it from Guy Chouinard.
Guy Chouinard had the best pass in the game. One of the best passers ever, right?
All time.
It was unbelievable. He was Shoe, they called him.
Yeah.
That's his nickname, Shoe. And he was a great guy. I was fortunate because when I got drafted, I got to practice with a lot of these old guys all the time. Like Kent Nielsen.
Whoa.
I go up because, you had.
Oh, my gravy, Vernie.
Oh, no. This is true story. Like, they had Dan Bouchard, Pat Riggin, and Reggie Lemelin.
Yep.
And half the time, one was fighting and the other one was hurt. And they'd always say, Vernie, we need you for practice today. And I get out there early for practice. I got Kent Nielsen. And he's like doing breakaways on me. I can't stop the guy. I'm like, what is going on here? I cannot. And he did that move where he goes to the backhand and you do your double stack and then you slide it by your ear and it go inside the post and in. It was just, the guy was so talented, hey? Kent Nielsen was amazing.
There's a reason they called him the Magic Man.
Oh.
And he was. Totally was. And you go back to Shue and his passing, Guy Chouinard. I used to go back. He would like throw it over three sticks, land it flat as you were breaking for the net.
Patter could do those saucers.
What?
It was a different type of saucer, though. It was a wobbly saucer. Wobbly.
Oh, it was unreal. Yeah.
And he would lay it on my stick, and it was like kind of a tap-in. And I would go to the bench like, Guy, how did you do that? I can't tell you. I have to kill you. So just go back there. I will find you. And he would, like, the year I was lucky enough to get 66. Guy, I believe, was first assist on 32 of those 66. Wow. He was unbelievable. And, like...
Can't give a good player a bad pass, though, Lanny, eh?
Well,
you actually
can.
How many goals went off your ass in?
No, but... Like when you feel it, you've got your hand up away.
That was me. That touched me.
Thank you. The chiseler over there. That
was my goal. Touch my pant.
Come on, Vernie. You
no, Shue was a great passer.
He was so
great
much
guy
fun.
Too. He was awesome.
Yeah. You know, I missed a step here too. We didn't touch enough on Chopper coming. You know, when you came over to Calgary, right? Behind the bench, like I Al McNeil. Yeah, Al Chopper. McInnes and McNeil, but McNeil.
So many people don't know the history behind Chopper or Al McNeil. There's Chopper or Al McNeil, and there's Chopper or Al McInnes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. They're both Ls, both from Nova Scotia, and, oh, my God, so much fun. But Chopper Al McNeil, one of the first things when I got to Calgary... And I got to Calgary, and I didn't have tape on my stick. I used to just rub the blade of the stick with old Gordie Howe tape. Because I thought, oh, Gordie, that's the guy I love.
Yeah, he knows everything, yeah.
And I would just rub the black tape on my blade. And I used the old co-hose that were a little rough, and it worked perfectly. And... Al McNeil said, like from day one, kid, you've got to put tape on your stick because the goaltenders can't see it coming off the black tape. They pick it up maybe a split second later.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, sure. And so I didn't do it for the first week, and then he kept reminding me, so I try it. I score a goal, and it then works. He's all over me. And sure enough... Holy shit, it couldn't have worked out better. But that was Chopper. And when you think about him, he wins the Stanley Cup in Montreal. He doesn't get fired. He has some agreements with Henri Richard and some other players.
Didn't he bench him too? Or was that...
He benched Henri Richard. Then Henri came back, scored a couple big goals later in the series, and maybe Chopper knew a hell of a lot more than people thought he did. And then Chopper goes back to the Nova Scotia Voyagers and wins three Calder Cups with the Voyagers. After that, I think it was 72, 76, 77, comes back to the Canadiens and wins two cups as, I believe, player personnel director in Montreal. So he wins three Stanley Cups, three Calder Cups before he ever comes to Calgary. And then he was one of the architects because Chopper believed that you could not have enough defensemen when you're in a big four series game or four series to get to the Stanley Cup. And sure enough, we get into Chicago. We lose Gary Suter for the rest of the year, the playoffs. And thank God, because Chopper, like, was adamant, and we end up getting people like Dana Mersen, Rob Ramage, Rick Natras.
Rammer was unreal.
And McCrimmon.
Sorry about that. Rammer was unreal because he came in and played power play, penalty kill, and regular shift. He was unbelievable.
Your final year, you win the Stanley Cup. How much does that mean to you? Did you know, like, did you know it was your last year before you won, or what were you thinking?
I knew that it was coming to an end because every time I get hit, I was starting to hurt more and more.
Yeah.
All that time, I desperately wanted to get to 500 goals.
Yeah.
And it looked like that wasn't going to happen, and there was. I think Hawk and Lube got hurt, and it might have been Pep. It might have been Mark Hunter. And now all of a sudden they were short a right winger. And
when I was on my way to, like, 60 in a career.
Anyway,
no.
I think there was 11 games left in the season, and I was 7 goals short. And I get on a roll, and I'm playing with a different line pretty much every time, and Crispy didn't have a choice. Oh, shit, I got to play him. And I score 7 goals in 7 games on a road trip. I score 6 on the road trip, and I get back home, and there's 5 games left, and I'm at 499, and never forget it. Very first game, we play at home, and I score number 500, and it was like, oh, my God, like, this is the greatest feeling.
So holy smokes.
It was unbelievable.
You talk about a hat trick. So I think it was March 7th, score 1,000 points. March 21st, score 500 goals. And 2 months later, so in a span of 2.5 months, score 1,000, score 500, and win the Stanley Cup. You have no choice. And I always loved the fact that John Béliveau won in 71. And I always wanted to play against John Béliveau. And I looked at it. I think he was second leading scorer at that time. And he decides to walk away. And I thought, wow, if that could ever happen, and you're out of here. And even though I didn't announce it till August, there was no choice. I had an offer to go to L.A., and there's this other guy, 99, there.
Yeah.
He had my number, so,
many,
so I didn't go.
So many, yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I couldn't do it. Yeah.
And it just didn't make sense because I'd be going on my own, and these guys know it's all about family. And I walked away, and it was the best decision I could have possibly made. Yeah.
You know, couldn't write a better ending, though, eh?
It was unbelievable.
Was pretty cool.
It was pretty fitting. All those achievements, all in two and a half months.
Oh, my God.
Life after hockey, Lenny.
Life after hockey has been absolutely awesome. To be able to work in the oil and gas business for 15 years, 10 years with Baker Hughes, then 4 years, 4.5 years with Flint, which became URS, which became AECOM, and then get a call out of the blue.
Sounds like your career, you're getting traded a lot.
Oh, wow.
Well, Vern.
I know.
Come on.
Minus 28.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Vern.
Yeah.
Anyway, then I got a call. Because Pat Quinn had just passed away.
Yep.
And he had just taken over as chairman of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And they said, would you step down from the selection committee and become chairman? And I thought about it. Okay, you're taking a chance. And hopefully I've paid enough people off along the way. So I did, became chairman, and I have 4 months left. It has been the greatest opportunity. If you love the game and love the history of the game, it has been so rewarding, you have no idea.
I was going to say, I'm just going to jump in and go, you have left the Hockey Hall of Fame in a tremendous situation. Like, when you think of the dollars you have raised and the group has raised, you know, to leave the Hockey Hall of Fame, it's unbelievable. Talk about that, Matt, when you started to where it ends.
Well, thank you, Patter. We were in debt, about $4 million in debt 10 years ago. And to have close to $8 million to the good and $15 million in a fund, a preservation fund that we believed when COVID hit, we had to find a way to protect the hall and never have it go through this again. And so we've raised $15 million in that fund, have $8 million in the kitty at this point. Back-to-back-to-back record years after coming out of COVID, I feel like the luckiest guy to be a part of a team that took it from there, and it had nothing to do with me. I was just a team player along the way, and oh my God, it was
it had
so
a lot
much
to do
fun.
With your leadership.
Yeah. Yes,
I'm going to call it,
but it had a lot to do with your leadership, hey, your personality, and the way you handle things. So,
yeah, Vern,
you're a class act.
If I could jump in and say, Chuck, you Farley. I mean, that, you know, Mac, it's because of you. And I mean, because of you, there's lots of stuff. Our alumni, you know, the way we do charity, the way our alumni, our people give back to the community, give back to the charity. I mean, that's the beauty of it, right?
Well, yeah, and you're Mr. Canada.
No.
When you look at it, you're known from coast to coast. Yeah. And everybody knows you and everybody loves you. And you just have everybody's respect. And you've earned it. You're just a great guy.
Thank you, Vernie. But I got to tell you, it has been the most fun. And two calls that meant the most to me being chairman of the Hockey Hall of Fame. One was Rogie Vachon. After 37 years of waiting, and he finally gets the call to go in the hall. And then the second one was to get Vernie's number.
Which I delivered immediately.
Who I had purposely deleted from my phone. No, to call Vernie, and Vernie thought I was calling for a golf game.
Yeah.
And
Free golf game, by the way.
Can you do this, Sherry? We're going to play golf.
I think his comment was, holy shit, this is unbelievable. And it was so cool to be able to call a teammate and give that kind of news to a teammate and a guy that not only could have won two MVPs or Conn Smythe in the playoffs, but won one and probably should have been a 1A or A-plus on the second one, because we wouldn't have got out of the Vancouver series without you. So thank you.
Well, thank you, because it couldn't have come from that call couldn't come from a better human being.
And there you have it, friends. Another great edition of our program and another great conversation comes to an end. Thanks to Lanny McDonald, the man of the hour this week and last week, for those great stories and the great conversation. And once again, thanks to Brent Cron, Colin Patterson, and yes, Mike Vernon even stuck around for the conversation. And we've got new stuff for you as the weeks roll on. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that will wrap us up on another edition. This is episode 4 of the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. You can find this program on the Flames Talk podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And we will talk to you on the next episode. Be well.